DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
We are loaded on today's show. Coming up a little bit later on, we'll get an update on what to expect from Vanderbilt on Saturday as managing editor from Athlon Sports, Mitch Light, who also happens to be the Vanderbilt sideline reporter. He'll be with us today on Dog Nation Daily. And in light of a lot of the conversation that's been going on around the program as of late, Jaden Hazelwood's decommitment, what Georgia's going to do to continue to pursue Hazelwood, and everything else happening with Georgia wide receivers right now, including, I would say, kind of some debates about how the Georgia offense is running right now. I thought today was a perfect day to get a former Georgia wide receiver Terrence Edwards into the program. Of course, many of you who saw Before the Hedges yesterday know that Terrence had a great breakdown and evaluation of Jaden Hazelwood. We'll get more of that and more, including the current Georgia wide receivers, from Terrence Edwards a little bit later on. This is going to be a timely discussion because how Georgia is using, or in some cases not using, its wide receivers continues to be a very hot topic. Before any of that, though, on what is a loaded show for us, let me begin with something I've already spoken about a little bit over the last few days, but I think is worth paying attention to some more here. I started off the show on, what was it, Monday, or was sometime within the last couple of days, talking about the national discussion that's going to happen about Georgia and Alabama, and maybe to a certain extent Clemson, about the return of these deep South teams to the college football playoff, that I believe there's just going to be a distaste for that here in 2018, given the fact that last year three teams in the college football playoff of the four were from the Southeast. I believe that this year, if it can be helped, the committee and the national media that influences the committee is going to try to go a different direction. And I believe that this potentially impacts Georgia more so than it does Alabama and Clemson. The reason why is Clemson plays in the very easy ACC. That's an easy ticket for Clemson to punch. They'll dominate ACC competition. Even when Trevor Lawrence got injured on Saturday, they still found a way to win against Syracuse, even without their quarterback having to go deep on the bench to a backup that was only in that position because Kelly Bryant had transferred. The ACC is just easy for Clemson. They have very little to worry about. They've also been in the playoff now 3 years in a row. They've become a national brand. Alabama, you know, kind of maybe people tired of Alabama around the rank and file fandom of college football. That may be true, but Alabama has cozied up here and created a very nice symbiotic, I guess is probably a bigger word than I should be using, but a mutually beneficial relationship with ESPN. So I think that, you know, at this point in time, too much negative talk about Alabama. I don't think you should expect too much of that from ESPN, because all of a sudden Nick Saban, who I called Stephen A. Saban because of how frequently he's on ESPN, all of a sudden he's sort of thrown open the doors here, and reporters and TV cameras and everything else are suddenly very welcome at Tuscaloosa. I think there's a reason that Saban's doing that. I think he hopes to get something from that, and I believe some of the talk around the college football playoff certainly will benefit Alabama were they to lose a game. We saw some of that happen last year. So the team that could face the brunt of this could be Georgia, and it's not because there's some sort of inherent bias against UGA specifically. I just think there's some weariness and some fatigue about too many Southern teams in the college football playoff, and certainly two from the SEC here once again. So all of a sudden now you're going to see a lot of national media types trying to nitpick reasons why maybe Georgia is not going to be as good as it was a year ago, and maybe not going to be the kind of team that just sort of has another cakewalk back into the college football playoff once again. It started, in fact, back in the offseason. We played this audio for you at the time. It's the ESPN college football reporter Heather Denich, who was on the Paul Feinbaum show and really went in hard on the Georgia schedule, ripping UGA before the season even began for what she thought playing too soft a schedule, especially during the non-conference slate. Here is Heather Denich from the Paul Feinbaum show back in the summer.
If you look at Georgia's non-conference schedule, it is atrocious. Everybody yes. ragged on Wisconsin last year. Everybody ragged on Washington 2 years ago. Well, I'm telling you, Georgia, you better win every other game because that non-conference schedule stinks.
As we said at the time, the reason why people ragged on those other programs, Wisconsin included, was not because of the non-conference schedule. And so help me, I will never understand the media's obsession with non-conference scheduling when it comes to overall schedule strength. The issue with Wisconsin was not who it played out of conference. The issue with Wisconsin was the fact that the division it played in within the Big Ten was as weak as water. The Big Ten East is where all the good teams are, the Ohio States, the Michigans, the Penn States, Michigan State in certain years. that's where all the good teams are in the Big Ten. The Big Ten West is a cakewalk. That was the criticism Wisconsin got. Georgia, one of the reasons why they don't get lumped in with teams like that is because Georgia's run through the SEC, even when the SEC East has been down, still includes Auburn every year, still includes tough competition from the SEC West. And we always felt like Dinich was off base in saying that, and to the extent that she represented anything from the collective thought of ESPN or the national media in general, we just thought she was flat wrong. But Heather Dinich, who sort of covers the college football playoff for a living, hasn't let go of that narrative yet. Recently writing at ESPN.com about a reason why Georgia might not make the college football playoff, although she admits they are one of the contenders, she's still on the idea of the non-conference scheduling. Here's Heather Dinich from ESPN this week. I'll read it to you. The Bulldogs are number 6 in strength of record, which isn't bad at all, but Missouri is the only opponent they've played with a record over 500. Georgia also doesn't have any wins over ranked opponents yet, as South Carolina has dropped out of the AP poll since its loss to Georgia. The Bulldogs also haven't played a Power 5, a non-conference opponent yet. Still stuck on the idea of the non-conference thing. And won't until the November 24th regular season rivalry game against Georgia Tech. Once again, that's Heather Dinich writing for ESPN this week. As we were saying kind of before the show started today, and one of my producers, Connor, was kind of on the same wavelength as me on this. What that blurb from Heather Dinich at ESPN.com does not point out, I would suggest conveniently, because it makes the argument of a weak Georgia schedule easier to make, is that after Georgia dispatches Vanderbilt this Saturday, Georgia's next 4 games stretch over the course of 5 weeks will all come against teams currently ranked in the Associated Press Top 25. Now, Florida and LSU, 2 of those teams play on Saturday, so one of those teams' rankings is going to drop after that game. But as it stands right now, LSU's number 5 in the AP poll. Florida's 22nd in the AP poll. Kentucky's 13th. Auburn's still in the top 10. Those are Georgia's next 4 games after what it's going to do Saturday on Vanderbilt. And when you couple that with already, as Dinich admits, that based on the teams that Georgia's already played, it's 6th in the country of strength of record, you can't gripe with Georgia about its schedule. And anyone who tries to is establishing what I believe is clearly proven as a false narrative. It's not a specific bias against Georgia. I believe it's more of an SEC fatigue, especially on the notion of having 2 SEC teams back in the college football playoff. And the team that benefits most, I believe, the program that benefits most, I believe, from people just being tired of the SEC may be Notre Dame. Because you saw the somewhat skeptical take that Heather had about Georgia there, but listen to how flowery the description is of Notre Dame, even though buried within her own words is some data that suggests that things aren't as good for the Irish as she would suggest. Now, I told you on Friday that Stanford-Notre Dame would be a big game for Georgia's playoff competition. The winner of that game would emerge as a real threat. Notre Dame won convincingly, and they become that threat. Give credit where credit's due. Notre Dame, especially with Ian Book at quarterbacks, turned out to be a pretty good team. But in terms of a resume better than Georgia, does that really hold up? Here's Heather Dinich once again from ESPN.com. Let me read this to you. She writes that Notre Dame's remaining strength of schedule is number 61, which is why the win over Stanford was so important. Virginia Tech, she says, snuck back into the rankings at number 24 this week, but would the Hokies fall right out again if they lose to the home to the Irish on Saturday? That what she means is that Notre Dame's about to play Virginia Tech, so that's a ranked opponent for now, but a win would knock them right back out of the rankings. Heather Dinich from ESPN goes on to write, sometimes the value of wins over, quote, ranked opponents can be blurry. So all of a sudden, Notre Dame doesn't have to win a top 25 game to be considered good. She says Notre Dame hasn't cracked the top 15 in offensive or defensive efficiency yet. That's Heather Dinich from ESPN.com. Now, it's worth pointing out here, while she brags on Notre Dame for what they've done, admitting that they're not in the top 10 yet in offensive or defensive efficiency, it should be pointed out that Georgia's in the top 10 in both of those, and as Heather Dinich says with her own data from the ESPN FPI stuff, Georgia's also 6th in strength of record right now as well, with more tough games to come. Now, the overall bottom line of this entire discussion is Georgia may lose and render this entire debate moot. That if that happens, then we'll be the first to say around here that Georgia's no longer in the playoff conversation. But as long as Georgia keeps winning, this debate is going to get hotter and more intense. There's going to be a groundswell of wishful thinking on the part of the media to get a team like Notre Dame in the playoff because they haven't been there before. They've got a huge national fan base. It'll be good for business. Impact on the overall bottom line, it'd probably be better to have Notre Dame in the playoff than Georgia just because of how many fans Notre Dame has and how many sectors of the country would react to Notre Dame being there. But the argument that's going to be made to put Notre Dame in over Georgia could be a false one. And when the media says something that's not true, when the media gets out in front of itself in terms of trying to rank someone ahead of Georgia, on this show we feel like it's our duty to make that known. And that's exactly what we're going to do. Expect a very intense debate as Georgia moves back towards the college football playoff once again. And we'll have some fun with that and follow it every step that it takes. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're presented by Marco's Pizza, and we are glad you are with us. No matter how you get to us today, live on video, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter feed, on the radio at noon, on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and everywhere podcasts can be found, like the Apple Podcast Player, the world-famous DogNation.com. We're just really glad you have found Marco's Pizza's Dog Nation Daily here today, and hope you get ready to settle in and enjoy some Marco's Pizza this weekend. It did occur to me that, boy, I might not sleep a lot over the next few nights. You got Braves playoff baseball. You got the next, I guess, three nights. You got a lot of late-night tired games. A Thursday, a Friday, back in Atlanta on a Sunday here again. So you're going to have some late-night stuff going on here. But we're looking forward to that. We're looking forward to Georgia, obviously, on Saturday. And then a wild run coming up for the Dogs after that, as we just sort of alluded to. So Marco's Pizza, a great number to have on your phone or that website ready to dial up, marcos.com. And you can take advantage of a great offer. When you're too tired to cook, too bleary-eyed from all the sports you've been watching to cook, take advantage of two medium, two-topping pizzas every day the Italian way for just $6.99 each. Once again, the website to go to, marcos.com for that. We're really glad to have Marco's Pizza with us here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. They're huge fans of Dog Nation, and we are very thankful that Dog Nation, many of our listeners and viewers included, have become big fans of Marco's Pizza. All right, before I get Terrence Edwards on the program, let me kind of keep the same theme started that I had a moment ago, where I mentioned some of the very tough games that Georgia has coming up. This is definitely going to be something to watch here as Georgia goes into LSU next Saturday for Dog Nation Invasion. It's an off week, then Florida after that, then Kentucky, then Auburn. All of these games, at least certainly the first three, Auburn may be a little bit different. The first three all to a certain extent look tougher now than they would have before the start of the season. But once again, maybe an example of the media getting out in front of itself a little bit when you think about the game at Kentucky coming up in November. So a couple tweets that I want to make you aware of here because I think this is kind of interesting. Jordan Rogers, the SEC network analyst who we talked about before was on the Paul Feinbaum show, and Rogers, in complimenting Kentucky, made an interesting comparison between Kentucky and Georgia. Let me show you this on the screen, give you a chance to see this. Feinbaum quotes Jordan Rogers as saying he actually has more questions about Georgia right now than I do Kentucky. That's Jordan Rogers, the SEC network analyst, saying that, hey, I think we've got Kentucky figured out. This is a really good team. My doubts, though, come with Georgia, who's had some weird, uneven performances through its first five games thus far. And this is one of those moments where I think that Jordan Rogers, and maybe to a certain extent some Georgia fans, maybe even me included, we need to start pumping our brakes just a little bit on the doubting Georgia, how many problems does Georgia really have scenario, including the game at Kentucky in a couple of weeks, who has become a little bit of the darling of the SEC thus far this season. But as David Purdom, who covers the gambling industry for ESPN, pointed out this week, if you go into Las Vegas and some of those sports books and what they call the look-ahead games of the year type lines, look ahead to the Georgia-Kentucky game, you know, while Jordan Rogers may be loving Kentucky and doubting Georgia right now, Vegas, who's forced to put its money where its mouth is, Vegas is not necessarily doing the same thing. In fact, let me let you see this point spread that Vegas has got out for Georgia-Kentucky right now. Among some others from Caesars Palace, Georgia listed as an 11.5-point favorite at Kentucky, despite the fact the Wildcats are undefeated, despite the fact the Wildcats have been, you know, beating people up home and on the road. Georgia is still nearly a 2-touchdown favorite in the game, which is an important thing to remember, which sort of brings us back to the situation with Georgia in general here, that what we're talking about is a program that still needs to be evaluated. Georgia's not perfect in every way, but the evaluation, I think, should come without any kind of emotion. There's no need to panic. There's no need to worry. Georgia is still building to where it needs to be. In fact, Kirby Smart, after the game on Saturday, an imperfect performance of the Vols, essentially sent the same message.
We have to improve. We've got to get better. A lot of things we can work on to get better, and we're going to continue to do that. I thought our team worked really hard last week, and we improved in some areas. We got to continue to do that.
So, listen, that's going to be the fun thing to watch here. The final tune-up on of the season against Vanderbilt. Then the real season begins beyond that. And Kirby Smart, who's been steadfast in his dedication the entire time, I think you'll see the same thing. Improvement on Saturday, and then a team that's ready to go into Baton Rouge the following week for the tremendous stretch run that's yet to come here for this Georgia season. With that in mind here on Dog Nation, Daly, let me remind you, as you start to think about the game against LSU coming up next Saturday, don't forget we'll be at the Marlowe's at Northlake on Tuesday for our Dog Nation big game preview. Really excited about this. Marlowe's at Northlake starting at 6 p.m. One of the things I'm excited about most on this is that Jeff Sintel, for the first time this year, is going to be with us for one of our Marlowe's broadcasts. So if you've not been to one of our Marlowe's events, this is a great one to come to. Jeff is always great with how he works the crowd there. We'll do our off-air conversation before the broadcast begins, and then we'll be live with the Dog Nation video channels after that. It's also a rooftop location, the Marlowe's at Northlake, so you're going to want to be there 6 to 8 p.m. this Tuesday, October 9th at the Marlowe's at Northlake, which is the address, let me give it to you one more time, 4156 La Vista Road in Tucker. That's 4156 La Vista Road in Tucker. Cannot wait to see you, to look ahead to Dog Nation Invasion Tuesday at the Marlowe's at Northlake for our Dog Nation big game preview. All right, it is Mitch Light, the Vanderbilt sideline reporter, later on to update us on the Commodores and talk some college football. For now, let's talk some UGA wide receivers with a great former Georgia wide receiver. Let's say hello to Terrence Edwards right here on Dog Nation Daily. And he is the all-time great Georgia receiver and a terrific analyst and a very good coach coaching the wide receiver position. It is really fun to be able to welcome back Terrence Edwards here to a Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza. Terrence, let me say thank you for your time. Really appreciate you joining us. How you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me, as usual.
Well, I'm looking forward to our conversation here, and I guess let me begin with this. Before we get to the guys on the field for Georgia right now, let me start with Jaden Hazelwood, because in the aftermath of Hazelwood's decommitment, Terrence, you know that there is a knee-jerk reaction on the part of some fans to say, well, that's it. I'm washing my hands of this. I'm moving on. I want the receivers who want to be at Georgia. But I know that you've watched the Hazelwood film very closely. As a coach yourself, you're even getting ready to face him on the high school field coming up here in a couple of weeks. So you know how good Hazelwood is, and I think you know why Georgia's going to keep recruiting him. Tell me why you think Hazelwood is so special as a receiver and why you don't think that Georgia's going to give up on him just because he may have decided to keep his recruitment open for right now.
Yes, he's a special talent that you don't give up on until his name is on pen and paper. So he tells you that he's going to another school on the early signing day, then that's when you give up hope. But, I mean, he's a talented kid. I mean, just watching him on film, being 6'3", almost 200 pounds, I wouldn't call him a blazer downfield, but he has legit speed to beat you deep. And if he can't beat you deep, he's a great 50-50 catcher where he goes over defenders and just snatches the ball out the air. And a lot of people can't do that. They think it's easier said than done, just jump up and hop on the ball. But that is a skill that a lot of people don't have, and he has that skill.
Yeah, and I guess to kind of follow up on that a little bit, I'm obviously not a trained eye at this position the way that you are, but the one thing that I think I've noticed from Hazelwood is that the way that Georgia wants their receivers to be physical for reasons beyond just blocking, they want guys to be able to get off press coverage. They want guys not to be affected when they're running their routes. When they do try to go up high point the ball, they want receivers to have enough strength to not get pushed around. One of the things I think that makes Hazelwood so attractive is he seems like that kind of guy. This is not one of these rail-thin sprinters who that's all he does is run fast, but it's going to get bumped to the ground every time there's contact. I mean, I've seen Hazelwood survive contact. I've seen Hazelwood initiate contact. And, Terrence, you were a guy that also played the game in kind of a physical way as a receiver. I would imagine that's also one of the things that you like about him, although I don't want to put words in your mouth. Have you seen that same physicality?
He does. He plays the position like a safety. He loves defense. Just listening to the interview yesterday with him, he loves defense. And one thing that he did say in the interview that he got more jacked up when Richard LeCount came down and hit a guy. So he plays the wide receiver position like a free safety. He plays mean. I mean, you would say he has that dog in him, and he goes out trying to destroy defenders. As a receiver, and that's just not with catching balls. That's blocking, that's cracking, that's doing everything that he needs to do to help his team win. That's why I love him so much.
So let me go back to some of the guys on the roster right now. Let me start with a couple of the bright spots here when it comes for Georgia this season. Mecole Hardman, as you know, this was a guy that was not really playing a lot of wide receiver in high school, mostly kind of a Wildcat-style quarterback. Spent his first year at Georgia training to be a defensive back, and then as a sophomore became a wide receiver and started learning the position last year. Now in his junior year here at Georgia, Mecole Hardman, it really seems like the light has come on for him. He's learned a lot quickly and made the position look easier than it actually is. How proud are you, because you know the work that's necessary to be the player that Mecole has come, how proud are you when you see how quickly he's made strides at what is, for all intents and purposes, kind of a new position?
I'm very impressed and excited with Mecole. I've had several conversations with him because both of us, you know, played quarterback in high school and didn't play the position as a receiver until we got to college, and he didn't play it till last year. And one of the things that really impressed me, not just his physical abilities, he struggled at the beginning of the season last year with some drop balls, some easy balls that he's kissed, but he was just adjusting to the position, and you could see the maturation of his knowledge of position just gain traction throughout the year. And if you look at him now, a year later, he's a totally different player, and it comes with confidence. He found that he could play the position at the highest level, and right now he's playing it at the level that he thought he could play it coming in as a freshman.
Another guy that I think has really seen the light come on for him this year, and I've been really happy to see, it's J.J. Holloman, because he wasn't used a lot as a freshman. Really, there were other freshmen last year that probably played more than him, but he has gotten on the field this year. He's made some big catches, caught a touchdown. Now, of course, we'll all kind of say that he needs to make sure he gives the ball to the referee after he crosses the goal line. We'll obviously all say that, but he's good enough to go get the football himself right now, and I think a target that both Fromm and Fields are showing they're pretty comfortable with. I really like what I've seen from J.J. Holloman this year. Would you agree with that assessment?
Oh, most definitely. You know, I've watched J.J. since he was in high school, and one thing he's always had was he's a big-body wide receiver with long arms and can run. And I just think he had to put it all together. And some, I think nagging hamstrings probably prevented him last year from getting on the field as much as he would like, but now I think he's 100% healthy, and he's showing the ability that we all thought he had coming out of high school. And I mean, the catches that he's made right now with the run at the catch have made him a very reliable and viable player that we need to have those explosive plays downfield.
Yeah, now let me talk about a couple other guys that I know I get a lot of questions about. Maybe you can kind of help shed some light on. Georgia fans haven't seen as much this year from Terry Godwin as they would like to see, especially when you think about the role that Godwin played for the team last year. The dramatic catch against Notre Dame comes to mind here, and part of it, I guess, is because of injury, although I guess we're hearing from the Godwin camp that injury is now gone. That's not an issue anymore, and I know he had a chance at a big play on Saturday, but there was a little bit of a mistiming there with he and Fromm on the hot route. Maybe that was a drop. Maybe it wasn't. But we haven't seen as much yet of Godwin as what we were, I think, probably hoping to see at the beginning of the year. What do you make of the scenario with Godwin right now, who is certainly the veteran in this group and a guy that we thought was going to have a huge season that has been kind of slow to take shape? How would you explain that thus far?
Well, we all know that he had the injury, whatever that injury was, during the spring, during training camp, during summer workouts. He's been nursing a nagging injury. That's how slow, I think, in my opinion, has slowed his production down so far. And I think he played a lot more snaps this past season. I just think he's going to get into his groove. He's too good of a receiver not to be counting on this season. I mean, he helped us win 13, 14 games last year with whatever it was, and made probably one of the catches of the year in the Notre Dame game. So he's going to be needed to continue to win the games that we need to win. So I'm not there, so I can't really speak on why he's not playing, but I know that we will need his productivity at some point this season. I think, the hot route drop pass is a pass that he catches 99 out of 100 times. He's just getting in his groove, and I see production is going to pick up for him by each game going by.
Well, it's important also to remember on this, Terrence, as I know you know, while he hasn't had the big numbers yet we've used to expect from Terry Godwin, Kirby Smart's always remained complimentary about the impact that he's had on other receivers, that he was instrumental in teaching the position of Mecole Hardman, and because he's been there for a while and been kind of the veteran presence, his numbers may not have exploded yet, but I'm sure that some of the other young guys who have had success, Godwin has probably played a role in getting them to the point where they are now.
Leadership is a big thing, and he's the veteran of that group, and I could really speak on that because, you know, when I was there, I had a lot of young receivers behind me, and Fred Gibson, Reggie Brown, Michael Johnson, Darrell Robson, my best friend in the world, Damian Garrett. So I think I was the only senior in that group, so I had a lot of young guys, and they followed my lead. Doesn't matter what it was, in the weight room, classroom, off the field, whatever it was, they followed my lead, and I think a lot of those guys follow Terry. Terry might not be putting up the big numbers that we're expecting right now, but he's leading a group of wide receivers, a group of young wide receivers, and we see how they're playing, and that comes from Terry Godwin.
So let me finish up with this, if you don't mind. One of the questions I still get probably more often than anything else is about Demetrius Robertson, who was a former five-star, the only five-star receiver for his signing class in 2016, who was a freshman All-American at Cal that same year, injured after that, but he had 700-something yards receiving his first year on campus there, comes to Georgia this year. I had high hopes he was going to be a big part of the offense, and it just hasn't really happened to the point now where he's gone from playing a lot but not getting targeted to, in some cases, not really playing a lot anymore. I don't know how well you know Robertson, how much you've seen him, given the fact that he's been out west. I don't know if you've got a relationship with him or not, but what do you make of the fact that Robertson hasn't quite found a home here at Georgia yet?
I know him a little bit. I've spoken to him on occasion. He wasn't there when I went down for the spring or the summer. I didn't go for the summer, just for the spring. So I haven't really had an opportunity to watch. So I definitely don't know the reason why he's not getting on the field as much as we all thought he would be on the field, because he's such a dynamic wide receiver that I think the speed element he brings is just a little bit different than some of the other guys. So I don't know if it's as a receiver, everyone has to trust you. The coaches, the quarterback, they have the trust that you're going to be where you're supposed to be when you're supposed to be. So I don't know what the deal is going on right now, because it's not talent-wise. So it has to be something else that we're not privy to.
Yeah, it's a good way to say that. Terrence, every time you're on with us, one of the things I always make sure to mention, because I just love the work that you're doing, is a lot of the receivers who are at Georgia right now are at Georgia because of the individual work you've done with them. There are guys in the NFL that you've given personal coaching to. There are next-generation 4- and 5-star wide receivers who you've been very instrumental with. And for those young folks listening right now, or parents probably more likely, who have aspiring wide receivers in their household, you're a guy that can get them to that next level. Tell folks how they can get in touch with the Terrence Edwards Wide Receiver Academy, because I know you coached up the right way, and I love connecting good coaches with good players, because I just think positive impacts at the youth level, at the high school level, are really important, and you're teaching the game the right way. So how can folks get more of what you're offering there?
Yes, on all social media, on Facebook, Instagram, on Twitter, you can reach me. You just can Google search my name, Terrence Edwards, or you can Google search TE, my initials, WR Academy, and you will find me on all social media.
Terrence, I really appreciate you being with us today. It is always a fascinating conversation. You know the position so well. It's a key position for Georgia right now. Thanks for being here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza.
Thanks for having me. Anytime.
Really good stuff there from Terrence Edwards. And Terrence is a diplomatic guy, right? I mean, you know, if you talk to him for 2 seconds, you realize he's the nicest guy in the world. He's going to choose his words carefully. And I thought he chose his words about Demetrius Robertson carefully, and yet the message still comes through the way that he intends for it to. He says, when you look at Robertson, all the physical gifts are there, so clearly it's something else that's keeping him from playing. I think that is probably where all the action is, all the intensity around the Demetrius Robertson discussion is with the way that Terrence Edwards says that. We know Robertson's capable of playing wide receiver. We saw him do it at the major college level. We know that the overall athleticism is still there, because even coming off an injury, he's had, what, a 72-yard touchdown run for Georgia already this season. He's had a couple of those jet sweep runs where he's really shown some dazzling athleticism. But why isn't he more a part of the Georgia wide receiver stuff? It's clearly not injury, because he's run and shown himself to be healthy. He knows the wide receiver position, but there's something else that he's not doing. And when I see the comment section on stuff like this, one of the things that I see pop up a lot is Georgia fans who say, you know, he didn't come to Georgia to block. You got to put him on the you got to put him in the game and let him do what he came to Georgia to do. And I understand where all of that comes from. I do. But as we just said with Jaden Hazelwood as well, the notion of being a physical wide receiver is not just blocking. It's getting off press coverage. The way that Georgia plays wide receivers is the way that a lot of teams play Georgia when it comes to the wide receiver stuff. It's man coverage with that pop right there at the line of scrimmage every time the ball is snapped. And you got to show that you can get off of that. Now, listen, y'all know I'm not a scout. I'm not breaking down every game film. I can't tell you what Robertson is and isn't doing when it comes to that. But the desire to be a physical wide receiver is about more than just blocking for the running backs. It really is. Case in point, I mean, for those of you who live in Atlanta, maybe you're a Falcons fan too, look at the way that Julio Jones has made himself into a Pro Football Hall of Famer. And, you know, the same way that Terrence Edwards just said, you know, I don't know that Jaden Hazelwood has blazing speed, but he's fast enough. I mean, wouldn't you say the same thing about Julio Jones? I don't clock him in a 40-yard dash, but part of what has made him great is the game speed with which he plays and the physicality with which he plays the position. That's what Georgia's looking for from its receivers there as well. I think that's a really important point. By the way, speaking of great things happening at the University of Georgia, not just on the football field, but in the academic world as well, and in the fundraising efforts as well. Also, you know, the Commit to Georgia campaign is going to raise more than $1.2 billion by 2020, and you have a chance to be a part of the great work that's already been done here, because the Georgia Commitment Scholarship Program has already created 292 new endowed need-based scholarships in less than 2 years. Imagine how great that is to pay for college for people who would not be able to go without the money being raised here. And with those increased scholarship support, Georgia students are also going to be able to create new opportunities to succeed beyond the classroom walls. It's part of the great things happening at UGA and at the University of Georgia. We know that it only takes one person to change the world, and we want to encourage more students to discover how they can make an impact, but this requires you and your help. We don't want anything between our students and the goals, so the way that you get involved here is by going to this website, give.uga.edu. give.uga.edu, and you can help UGA continue its mission and learn more about the Commit to Georgia campaign.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
All right, really good stuff there from Terrence Edwards, the former Georgia wide receiver. Always a lot of fun to have him on the program. And don't forget, we got Mitch Light coming up for a little bit of news on Vanderbilt, Georgia's opponent on Saturday, and some more thoughts with the college football playoff race as it stands right now. We'll do that with Mitch Light here coming up in just a moment. Before that, though, let's do our MyBookie Best Bets. And I love doing this during the week just because it's kind of a fun way to get some action going here and some opinions about the games, and more than just who's going to win or lose, but who's going to win or lose on the point spread basis. And that's one of the reasons why I like MyBookie, is they allow you to kind of have some fun and get involved here. But it's not just college football. You can do other sports as well. Playoff baseball is getting going, for instance. That's a great thing to do. And you can do more than just the straight single-game bets, which is kind of the way that I talk about on this program. But you can also do parlays, which just gives you a chance to wager a little bit of money but also win a lot. The Conor McGregor fight, back in the octagon again. A lot of prop bets you can make on that. You know, more than just who's going to win the fight, but will there be a knockout? How long will it go? It's all right there for you at MyBookie when you find them online. MyBookie. That's how it's spelled. When you get there, it's the promo code DOGNATION. And that's one word, with spelled DAWG. Your first deposit can be matched dollar for dollar, but you got to go right now to get involved with that. MyBookie, the promo code DOGNATION. Your first deposit can be matched dollar for dollar. You got to do it quickly, though. I have been told here that is going to go away here very soon. So go ahead and take advantage of that offer while it does exist for you. With that in mind, let's go ahead and do our MyBookie best bets for this particular week. And I would say that this is probably, from my estimation, the hardest slate of SEC games we've had all season. Now, listen, I have a way to making them all seem hard from time to time, but this is certainly a pretty difficult stretch. Let me begin with Alabama at Arkansas. Now, I believe this may be in Little Rock, if I'm correct here. It is not as in Fayetteville. Okay, I've been told this is not Little Rock. This is Fayetteville on Saturday. Either way, I'm not sure it matters because I'm not touching this game one way or another. Alabama has a history of not really covering big numbers, and Arkansas, even though they're not very good, has played a little better defensively as of late. This is a place that Alabama, as recently as 2014, snuck out with a very close 14-13 win. This is probably an easy win for Alabama here, but I'm just going to stay away from this game all the way around. 35 points is too much, given the fact that you never really quite know Alabama's level of motivation. A little stronger take for me on Missouri at South Carolina. I think by virtue of the fact that South Carolina is at home, I'm going to take the Gamecocks -1. Now, the story here for South Carolina is they are really struggling at quarterback, either because Jake Bentley is just injured or ineffective. There's been some talk coming out of the state, which is the big media entity down there in Columbia or over there in Columbia, that Dacreon Joyner, the freshman quarterback, may play some on Saturday. He's certainly gotten some snaps with the number one offense at practice this week. I don't think Missouri's good enough to go on the road and win this game. I know that people sort of fell in love with them after they kept it relatively close to Georgia a couple of weeks ago. I think that's fool's gold. South Carolina can't lose to everybody, although they have not looked really good yet. I will take South Carolina -1 against Missouri. I took them last week and I was wrong. I'm going to go back to the well again this week, and I believe I'm going to be right. I think that LSU-Florida is a really interesting game, and this is one of those games where, contrary to recent evidence, I've got to stick with my guns here. I have been telling you all offseason into this season that Florida's not very good. Against Kentucky, that was certainly proven to be true. I would suggest the performance against Tennessee was not as good as the final score made it look. Although even I will admit that going on the road and winning at Mississippi State is a pretty impressive validation for Dan Mullen here. I would also suggest, though, that win made easier by some drops by Mississippi State wide receivers and the fact that Nick Fitzgerald right now is just not the quarterback that he once was. It is tempting here to think that the home team rises up as a small underdog, but that temptation would be wrong. LSU wins. No look ahead for Georgia here for me on this. At Florida as a slight favorite, LSU wins this game. I will take LSU -2.5 as a MyBookie best bet. I'm going to go that direction. Take a look here at Kentucky, Texas A&M. When you see this point spread, you may be tempted to think that I have typed it in incorrectly on the screen, and yet that's not the case. Kentucky is the number 13 team. They are on the road on Saturday, and they are a 5.5-point underdog to an Aggies team that is just 3-2 on the season, I believe. When in doubt, assume that my bookie knows something that you don't. My bookie here, I believe, does know something that you don't. But this is a tough spot for a Kentucky team that I think has a very good chance of finishing this season unranked still. I'm going to take Texas A&M as a relatively sizable favorite at home. Hopefully it'll drop a little bit and you'll get it later. But even at 5.5 or potentially even at 6, I probably still like Texas A&M here. They are a MyBookie best bet. And then one final pick to make before we welcome in Mitch Light to the program here today. Auburn at Mississippi State. Mississippi State is +4. I think this is a very difficult game to handicap. I think that Mississippi State is really good at in an area in which the counterbalance for Auburn is really bad. Mississippi State has a really good defensive line. Auburn has a very bad offensive line right now. But ultimately, I think Auburn's defense against a Mississippi State offense that struggled, I think that's the play here. I'll take Auburn on the road as a favorite to cover, and I'll make that a MyBookie best bet. So get your action in at MyBookie. Use the promo code DOGNATION. Your first deposit can be matched dollar for dollar. And with that said, let's say hello to our good friend, the sideline voice of the Vanderbilt Commodores and the managing editor for Athlon Sports, a terrific, terrific, not just fan of college football, but a really great expert and analyst to discuss a lot of the things going on. It's Mitch Light back here on Dog Nation Daily once again. Mitch, we really appreciate your time today. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Brent. Thanks for having me on, as always.
Well, it's great to be back with you again, and I've got a lot I want to talk to you about, but I always like getting the outside impressions of Georgia here, and you know college football. You know that fans are never satisfied. Some of the discussion around Georgia over the last couple of weeks, despite the fact they're undefeated and ranked number 2, has been somewhat negative, especially about the kind of at times sloppy offense or maybe just not quite gelling offense. What have you made of Georgia thus far this season?
It's interesting. When programs kind of make the jump from good or very good to elite, the expectations change tremendously. And I always say, like, when we're looking at teams in the preseason, you know, when we're doing our rankings, and, you know, I'll take Alabama as the obvious example. We don't talk about what Alabama does well because sure. they do a lot of things well. We look for faults. We try to find faults with teams. And I think that's where Georgia is right now. They have made the leap to elite status. So we know they do a lot of things well. And I think some people and fans, they expect perfection. So when you're not playing, you know, all facets of the game aren't clicking, then there's going to be some people that aren't happy. I'll take Clemson as an example. We always think of Clemson as a program that's right there with Alabama. They've won a national title, and they've competed for national titles. But look at their regular season. There's been hiccups along the way. There's been games where they flirted with disaster. Look at last week's game. So it's just difficult to play at a high level every game. Now, I think Georgia's been very good. I mean, the Missouri game was... You know, I didn't love the way that Missouri ran the ball on Georgia. So I'm looking to find, you know, and the fact that the offense didn't score an offensive touchdown in the first half. And then last week, maybe you'd like to, you get that big lead against Tennessee. Not that the game was ever in doubt, but you don't want, you know, let Tennessee come back and get within two scores. So I guess based on expectations, Brandon, my grade for Georgia would be a B-plus this year.
Okay, that seems about right and probably in line with what a lot of our listeners and viewers are saying when it comes to that. And when I look at Georgia the rest of the way, Mitch, and from the perspective of Athlon Sports, maybe you noticed the same thing, that I think one of the real stories is starting to become that the Georgia schedule, which was thought to be very easy at the beginning of the year, at least the snapshot of the next four games, maybe after Vanderbilt on Saturday, all of a sudden it seems a lot tougher. The next four opponents stretched over the course of 5 weeks. They're all currently ranked in the Associated Press poll. LSU is way better than I thought the Tigers would be. Obviously, we know the story with Kentucky. I have to admit that even Florida right now is a little better than I thought it would be, based on the way it's played on the road the last couple of weeks. Suddenly, Georgia may be a little more challenged by the SEC slate than we thought it would be. Would you agree that that's kind of a little bit of a forming narrative here?
Yeah, I agree. And only one of those games is a home game, the Auburn game. Right. Obviously, Florida's a neutral site. You know, I think LSU's good. They're better than I thought they'd be. I don't think they deserve their ranking based on their resume. I don't believe so. They'll have ample opportunity to prove it over the next, you know, month, just like every team will. So that will no doubt be a challenge. I didn't jump off the Dan Mullen bandwagon when they lost to Kentucky. We picked Florida second in the SEC East before the season. Big Dan Mullen fan. I think they've got enough talent to make Georgia sweat in that game there. And then obviously Kentucky, will find out if they can keep it rolling this week. The thing that's impressive about Kentucky is there's no smoke and mirrors with what they're doing. It's not like they've been outgained by 200 yards, and they're forcing a bunch of turnovers. They're beating people up at the line of scrimmage with that running game, and they're getting after the quarterback. So I guess my point being, Kentucky is showing signs that they're not going to, you know, I don't think they're going to go undefeated by any stretch, but there's nothing fluky about what they've done. So that will be if Kentucky is somehow undefeated, that will be the game of the century in Lexington.
We will be at the halfway point by Saturday, and when we close out our conversation, I want to get your thoughts on sort of the early positioning in the college football playoff race. But before that, let me squeeze in something on Vanderbilt here, a team that you know really well. And for those of us outside the Commodore bubble here, it's been a little confusing. Vanderbilt played close at Notre Dame, but also played close with Tennessee State. Shurmur, the quarterback's a name we've kind of come to know here. What else should we know about Vanderbilt heading towards Saturday?
Yes, it's been a weird season. They opened up with two impressive wins over, you know, solid group of five teams where they played very well, and then they went up to Notre Dame and, you know, outgained the Irish, had a chance to win that game down the stretch, and then really got manhandled by South Carolina, which kind of, you know, got a lot of people around here upset who had high expectations. And last week's game was, you know, strange. But look at the box score, and, you know, Vanderbilt outgained Tennessee State by 200 yards, and they moved the ball up and down the field. But Kyle Shurmur, for the first time in a while, made some mistakes. He had a bad interception in the red zone. First two drives ended in the red zone with interceptions, and that's just not the type of thing that we've expected from Kyle Shurmur. And my whole thing with Vanderbilt this year is Kyle Shurmur needs to be great for this team to be good. He was great at Notre Dame and they almost won. He was only good last week, and the defense had real trouble stopping the mobile quarterback at Tennessee State. Now, I'm not expecting Vanderbilt to Georgia's offense to struggle with Vanderbilt. Obviously, Georgia's got a lot of weapons, but if for some reason things are stalling, be interested to see what happens with Justin Fields, because just last week Vanderbilt really had no answer for the mobile quarterback at Tennessee State. I think Fields could really cause some problems for this defense.
That's an interesting thing to consider, because I'm imagining Fields is going to play some on Saturday, so that'll be fun to watch. Let me finish with this. I want to give you six teams, if you don't mind, and I want you to tell me if you think there's any chance the college football playoff doesn't include four of these six. Georgia, Alabama, Clemson, Notre Dame, Oklahoma, Ohio State. Of those six, are we guaranteed to get the four coming from that six right now?
You know, right now, I'm scanning the rankings. I'm having a tough time finding a team outside of that group. Washington could be a dark horse. They lost to Auburn. They've looked good the last couple of weeks. If they, you know, if they run the table and win the Pac-12, they play their way into the mix. But if I were betting, man, I would take your list over any of those outside teams.
And if it comes down to, as we've talked about on this show a couple of times, the notion of an undefeated Notre Dame or a second SEC team getting in the way we had a year ago, at that point in time, it's going to be hard for the second SEC entrant to win the argument after having, what, three deep South teams and two SEC teams in the playoff a year ago. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, I tend to think it should only matter what happens this year, and hope that the committee would look at it that way. And it just depends on how the, you know, because not every win's created equal. Our team's dominating other teams? Are they just getting by? You know, Notre Dame's schedule will be tough enough to have a lot of quality wins. Let's say that team is Georgia that loses in the championship game. How does Kentucky finish? How does Missouri finish? You know, if all those teams are top 25 caliber teams, that helps their resume. If they somehow fall apart, a couple of them, they don't have as many quality wins, then that hurts their resume. So I get the hypothetical questions in early October now, but it's so difficult because we don't really know how those resumes are going to look.
So I was at my supermarket the other day. I saw the Athlon Sports College basketball preview already on newsstands. That was a great thing to see. I know that you and Braden Gall got the Athlon College Football Podcast. What else does Athlon have going on these days that our audience needs to know about?
Well, thanks for the plug there. Yeah, the college basketball magazines are on sale at our website, athlonsports.com/store or newsstands, and the Cover 2 podcast, Braden Gall and I do twice a week, Mondays and Wednesdays, talking college football.
Well, listen, Mitch, it's great to have you on the program. We'll see you in Athens on Saturday, and we appreciate your time here today.
Anytime. Take care.
All right, good stuff there from Mitch Light from Athlon Sports. Incredible, incredible work that he does there at Athlon Sports. We're big fans of them, and we appreciate his time here on Dog Nation Daily here today. Let me also say this. The 23 days from right now, Georgia goes back to Florida. Jacksonville wins again. It's our Gator Hater Countdown here on Dog Nation Daily. And let me also add before we're done, really excited about Dog Nation Invasion next week and all the sponsors who make that possible, as we're going to be Friday at the Mannings in New Orleans starting at, 3 p.m. Central Time, 4 p.m. Eastern for that great event there, for kind of our Dog Nation preview kickoff event on that Friday night. So tune into the Dog Nation video channels if you're not going to be there. Come see us at Mannings in New Orleans if you are not. And then on Saturday, we're going to be with our Dog Nation Invasion tailgate. We're going to be live, of course, at Walk-Ons there in Baton Rouge. It's all brought to you by R.S. Andrews, Marlowe's, Kroger, Skyland Brookhaven. We'll see you tomorrow right here on Dog Nation Daily. And on video, we got some time for some comments here. Hope you enjoyed Terrence Edwards today and Mitch Light today. Both really good guests and really good stuff. And now it's your chance to be the guest and your chance to drive the conversation here with some comments. We got a nice little window of time to be able to do just that. Jesse Carl Johnson, to go back to a subject we talked to Terrence Edwards about, says, unfortunately, D-Rob, let me get his comment here as they kind of come in fast here. Jesse says, unfortunately, D-Rob thought all he had to do was come here and he would automatically play.